fool around, don't let him ride.
That's blues singer and guitarist Lurie Bell with Don't Let the Devil Ride. It's an old gospel song and is on Lurie Bell's 2012 album, The Devil Ain't Got No Music. How you like that? This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And it's a hell of a day, another really hellish day for folks out in Texas. Our hearts and prayers go out to them and hope that they pull through. This is a very, very, very rough storm. Oh, let me see. I'm hearing the landscapers. They have to be. What is happening where I am is that after the storm, they had just cut down some trees, and just as a safety measure, they're cutting down other limbs of trees that look a little funny. And so that should we get a storm, we wouldn't have tree limbs flying all over the place. But it is very, very noisy, and I'm hoping it is not so noisy that it distracts us today. They had stopped a little while ago and probably went for lunch or something, but they cranked it up again. And there you go. So Hurricane Harvey has dealt some serious damage to the Gulf Coast, and thousands of people are still unable to occupy their homes. They're underwater, literally, in their homes. Many people who have not been seen or heard from, the neighbors are trying to locate their neighbors, and that kind of work is going on, trying to resettle, but it's going to be a long time before that happens, according to the experts, that even after this hurricane goes away, withers and goes away, the cleanup is going to be nothing short of historic. The damage done has been so extraordinary that it would take that much time, a lot of time, and a lot of money. And in the meantime, people just have to find a way to reorganize their lives to the best that they can. The death toll, they're saying, is surprisingly low, but that's only until they do a thorough checking. It's under a dozen so far, but they expect that number to go much higher as they get to people and find out, you know, what's going on with them in their homes and so forth. Some of the areas are not easily reachable. There are all kinds of impediments, as one would expect in a horrific storm like this. You know, you have the electric wires overhead. You don't know if they're in the water, all of these kinds of things. I felt so sad all weekend. So sad because, you know, tragedies of this magnitude are very hard to take in, very hard to comprehend. And all you could think of is, what would be these people's next move? You know, what are they going to do? And if that were me, you know, what would I do? It's a very hard thing. And my heart goes out to people who, you know, are disabled, people who are elderly, people just starting out life with a new baby. It all comes together as one big human tragedy. And your heart can't help but go out to people in situations like this. You know, you see people walking, but they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. And life starts over. Because it must. And there has to be a way. You have to find a way. And that's all I've been thinking about over the weekend. Happy, in a sense, and comforted to know that it could have been much worse. And that's the comfort. What we're seeing, the pictures that they're televising and the information they're relaying from Texas, is very, very daunting. But still you get those stories of people helping each other, people taking care of each other the best they can until they get the help they need. And in that regard, the White House has basically declared the area a disaster, including Texas area, the area affected, and now even Louisiana, parts of Louisiana. We're hoping that the storm, because now the issue is controlling the flooding. You know, I just read before getting on air, one of the main rivers is more than 59 inches above normal. And it's not done yet. It's continuing to swell. So this is massive. This is a massive tragedy here. And we send our hearts to them, really, and hope that they pull through. I have not found, I haven't found an organization that I feel comfortable just donating funds. I'll have to wait a couple more days and research that. Because as I would explain later on in the week, this is the time when the vultures come out. All kinds of organizations suddenly appear, and they're all collecting money to aid the unfortunate people who need it. But of course, that money will never be seen. That money goes into somebody's pockets, and it would be a long time before they are identified and prosecuted. So at times like this, while on the one hand you want to help, on the other hand you have to be so careful about, you know, the propensity for people to do the wrong thing and to take advantage of an already sad situation. So I'm holding back until we get some clear pictures as to what credible organizations exist out there and how best to help. There are many ways to help, and we've got to start searching for that. Well, I opened with this because it's unavoidable. It's a major tragedy, really. It's a massive, massive tragedy. Because it involves such a huge swath of land, and all these people who were there thinking, well, you know, from time to time they have a little thing, a little problem, but not like this. This is not like any other problem they've had before. So we keep our eyes and try to find on the situation, and we try to find credible ways and dependable ways to help. So my caution is, don't just start sending checks all over the place. This is the time to exercise a bit of caution and wait until we figure out where that money, if you wish to send any money, should go, because this is predatory season. This is, and it's a huge opportunity because it's actually covering two huge states now. And, you know, they're out. And all the more reason to keep watch because, as I said, later on in the week, we'll be doing a story about the anatomy of charities that break the law. And we'll be talking about, in this regard, Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, because they're at it again. This time, in places like Malawi, that has a tragedy going on internally with as a result of the war spillover effect of war, you have all kinds of things going on there. And what do you know? Hillary Clinton's Clinton Foundation pops up offering help, and already is beginning to solicit millions of dollars to help the people of Malawi. So we're going to be doing that to let people know that she's at it again. The Clinton Foundation is at it again, and not just in Malawi. We found at least three countries, war-torn, naturally. This is where they come in. That's how they come in, under the guise that there's a humanitarian crisis, and they are willing, more than willing, to help. But they really need your support, your financial support, to help them do the right things, to get these people out of the quandary that they're in. And we will find the formula. There's a kind of model that they've been following, and they continue to follow it. You know, they look for the poorest areas where there are no real laws, where there is a, preferably where there is a head of state who is most amenable to being compromised and taken, you know, into their circle for a couple of dollars here and a couple of dollars there. And they make arrangements with these heads of state to make it appear that they're in this thing together. But that's not true. And even here in the United States, we've had the same thing when Katrina occurred. You remember that, it was grand larceny. Everybody was involved in grand larceny. And it took quite a while to unravel what had been done to the people of New Orleans via these philanthropic organizations to hunt them down. The good thing is, this is a particular kind of crime that is not tolerated. When you get convicted of any count of charity fraud, especially in circumstances like this where people are coping with a tremendous disaster, the law is brutal. You can get easily 20 years for each count of fraud, very easily. So we'll be talking about that, because we've seen them pop up again, and they're popping up in patches of Africa that are undergoing tremendous hardship. And so we got to get back on track with the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. Okay. So while the folks in Texas were coping with incredible misery, we see some interesting moves made by Donald Trump. Anybody care to share what you know of those moves at 888-874-4888? He did some really interesting fancy footwork when his people were not really taking a hard look at him at that time, because, you know, there was a national disaster. And still he managed to pull off a couple of things that we'll have to live with for a while, but we most importantly have to fight them. Do you know them? Do you know at least one of those things that he pulled off on last week, Friday in particular? Call in at 888-874-4888 and share what you know and tell us what the significance of it is. Not just him, but John Sessions also pulled a fast one on Friday. Friday was a big day for sneaky stuff happening at the highest levels in this country. Anybody aware? Okay, I'll wait for a little while longer, because I'm optimistic. I know you know what some of these things are. Maat, you're on the air. Give us one of those things that happened on Friday.
Yes. Let me comment on two of them. First of all, Sebastian Gorka, the one who wore the medal of his dad and his still seeming association with this far-right Nazi-affiliated party, he was on vacation, and he got his walking papers at La Chief of Staff Kelly, I'm sure. The problem is that his wife, Kathleen, I believe her first name is, Kathleen Gorka, is still in the administration, and she recently made a move where an organization called Love, what is it? I can't think of the exact name, but it's I'm not saying, I'm just waking up here. I'm not saying his last name correctly, but he's someone who at 14, I believe, found himself in that white supremacist movement and became a leader. And now he has an organization that really knows very intuitively how to turn people around from that no path type of situation. And the $400,000 grant that had been already approved under the Obama administration, the wife, who's still in the administration, decided to revoke that. And I purchased his book recently to help out. I'm blanking on the title right now, but he's written a book of the story, and his last name is Pisciolini, something along those lines. Also, Stephen Miller is another essentially racist white supremacist, and he's still there, and I'm sure there are others who have similar credentials, so things are just getting started if Kelly does his job. And the other thing,
but you know, history, I'll come to you in a minute. What's the significance of all of this?
Well, while the hurricane was starting, and it's kind of peculiar that they didn't give a mandatory evacuation order and help people get from those areas, is that you would have thought the focus would have been, you know, just staying calm and mostly silent, because it's just the tweets just pile up like crazy. And I think some of these moves were done to kind of, you know, distract attention from what happened, along with a pile being pardoned. Now, that's really something.
Wait, you're going all over. I'm interested in Gorka. Sebastian Gorka, we don't know whether he has resigned or whether he has been fired. Do you? Are we clear as to what his status was?
According to news reports, is that he said that he resigned, but another senior source in the White House said that, no, he didn't resign.
Did anybody know what Gorka did, actually, at the White House?
Well, that was one of the reasons why it was so easy to fire him, because he didn't really have the
credentials. Nobody knows what this guy did at the White House, and yet he has, you know, he's touted as an intellectual, a very thoughtful person who was advising the president, but of what?
He was supposedly a counterterrorism expert. Although he had never lived or spent time overseas, he didn't have certain credentials, such as being able to speak languages like Arabic. You know, the usual credentials that a so-called counterterrorism expert brings. And he was also an Islamophobe, not to mention his Nazi credentials. So, yeah, that's who he was. And
nobody knows who this guy is, what he did, and why he was there. Nobody knows, for sure.
Well, yeah, he was there because
he seemed to have no title, and he seemed to be a kind of guy who floated wherever he wanted to float to. But and, he has
and
gone.
And he got his security clearances revoked because he shouldn't have had it in the first place.
Look, you everybody know, who has security there practically doesn't deserve to have security clearance, including Ivanka Trump, including his son-in-law, including a whole bunch of people who report every day to the White House, and people don't know what they're doing and why they're there. And
exactly.
Even though he's gone, his wife is still there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, tell me that that makes sense.
Well... of course it doesn't, and the hope is that it will be part of a process where all of those types will be cleared out, and of course you'll still have Trump standing, and those of us who are keeping our fingers crossed that he'll be gone. Although Pence also needs to go because he seemed to have participated in a lot of. Tomfoolery and lying also.
He course, remember but this is just Friday. Imagine. There are people dealing with serious stuff that we hadn't heard anything from the White House about. We didn't hear anything from the White House about the storm, the hurricane, and the tremendous damage it caused. We didn't hear from Donald Trump for a while, but all of this is going on.
I know, and FEMA should have been standing up and calling for an evacuation and bringing in the means for such an evacuation and appropriate shelter. But they probably, one of the issues is that there's so much missing personnel in the White House, I think it's like 500 plus, and then the assistant secretaries and the deputy secretaries of state, they're also missing. The one to South Korea and to Afghanistan, the ambassadors, they're also, Utrice and family, there was a special office that dealt with Afghanistan, and they were summarily shut down, and so it's a mess. It's I've always called it chaotic, and I've heard you say that.
President Chaos. Yes, President Chaos. This is the way he's running things, and everybody's okay. Everybody's calm.
And did you hear? Did you hear that Mathis and Tillerson came out, I don't know exactly when, but after all of this went down, they came out with statements distancing themselves from the statements that Trump made around Charlottesville, you know, about the very fine people and who initiated the violence, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we see some more people departing because people who have who place a value, a high value on their integrity and their character, they can't take much more of an association with Donald Trump. They just can't. They're trying
true.
To get out to save their names, really. And
reputations, exactly.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. But I also believe that they are going to be responsible in the end. All these folks who know what is going on but won't say that Donald Trump is mentally ill. They wouldn't say it. But they've seen it. They've experienced it. They don't say anything publicly that they have concerns about the president's mental health. They're not going that far. Well, thanks for getting us started today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Well, we have a lot of things going on. Now, could you imagine this? You're the president of a country, the most powerful country in the world, as it is presented. A major storm is hitting a huge section of your country, physically battering it, doing a lot of damage. When it landed, It landed at 135 miles an hour. And it took up from there. So you could imagine the damage such a storm would cause. People obviously are looking to a leader for help. And it is customary in times like this, when a situation goes beyond the norm, you know, you can have a little thing happen, but it's self-contained and it's done. And people go back to their lives. This is not such a case. This is a case that has people all along the coastline very, very concerned. Their houses are flooded. Some can't find missing members of their families. It is a catastrophe. Now, the physical presence of such a thing, a catastrophe like this, could do enough damage. And so people look to the president. Where is the president? The president is the person who information, one assumes, filters up to, so that he should be able even to announce from the outset that these areas, he wants the nation to know that it is going to sustain some damage in these particular areas. And he wants people to prepare to the best that they can, to hunker down, whatever the advisors tell him to say. You get in front of a microphone, you alert the nation, and especially those areas of the nation, that there is a situation developing that is going to be very, very serious. But here he has talked to his weather experts and whatever it is, and this is what they are recommending, and he is recommending too. That if you're not in danger right now, and you can see your way to getting, let's say, non-perishable foods or something like that, you could try doing something like that to hold off. But the weather forecasters are saying this is going to be a very serious storm. Don't go outside and play. You know, the usual things that they tell you. The main thing that they're telling you these things for is that they're not meteorologists. The president or the person in power, in charge, is making these statements really to calm people down, to give them a sense of things are serious. I've been advised that things are serious, so I'm advising you that things are serious, and to take precaution and lay out some facts that they write down on a piece of paper for you to read or say. You say that, but that is not as important as you functioning in the role of leader. You're the leader. So you put out an all-points bulletin, and you as the leader are announcing, you crunch all the details together and you put it out in two or three simple sentences. And what you're saying to the people who are targeted is, it's going to be rough, but we will hang in together, and there are some things I want you to do. I want you to prepare. Don't get so excited that you lose focus. Maintain focus. Be calm. And now here is General blah, 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 who is going to tell you some more. And then the general talks, and then the weather people talk. They give a comprehensive accounting for what it is they are anticipating, and how the people can help themselves and help the situation by conducting themselves in a particular way. Now, that is what a head of state would be expected to do. And, you know, he could even introduce his team, the top team that is handling this, and they're doing their very best to anticipate what is next, because this storm is acting quite erratically, but even so, with incredible force, and it will cause damage. We don't want anybody to be in the line of that. That kind of tone is what the president should have done from the very beginning. Instead, he was doing something else. He was busy deciding who to fire. He was busy concocting new plans. What do you know of the new plans since Friday when he went missing? Nobody saw him. Nobody knew where he was and what he was doing. Did you manage to get that news on your own? Call 888-874-4888. Let's hear what you've learned and what the significance of it is. Quite a few things went on in the dark on Friday and will soon be fully blown in a matter of days. But we got enough of a hint that what was done on Friday should cause concern. Anybody? 888-874-4888. Well, you tell a lot about the character of a person when, in a situation like this, they choose to do something that is off the map, unknown, not anticipated, because people's attention is drawn to something else. And what they're drawn to is this pending tragedy, mega tragedy, that is facing the nation in Texas and in Louisiana and in other parts of the South. What he did was he decided that he was going to pardon a very, very controversial person, Mr. Arpaio. It was expected. He had hinted at it at a speech that he made in the prior days. And look, it's Friday. People are talking about what's going on in this hurricane. This would be a good time. And so he formalized it. He formalized the pardon of Arpaio. Now, who is Mr. Arpaio? Well, he's known all through the South, particularly. He's from Arizona. And he was known. Many stories had been done about him as a kind of cute profile. But there's nothing cute about this man. He's the toughest law enforcement officer, basically, in the United States. That kind of stuff. You know, the toughest guy in the West, the toughest guy in the East, the toughest guy in the South. You know, those titles that they put out. He was one such person who was hailed almost universally by the media as a kind of guy we need in this country to have people obey the law. Law and order. He is Mr. Law and Order. He had been in office for a very long time. And this is his thing. You know, he would call it law and order and discipline, keeping everybody well regulated. He's the former sheriff, in fact, of Maricopa County, and he liked being known as the guy to be feared. He used to institute people who were sent to the county jail were subjected to all kinds of indignities and illegal things. And in his view, and you would have a lot of people who would endorse this kind of view, is if you had obeyed the law, if you didn't break the law, you wouldn't be here. And since you're here, you'll have to put up with everything I tell you to do. And he would mete out justice in his own way, usually not in a fair way. And he had he was especially disdainful of Latinos, of people of color generally, but particularly he had a hatred of Latinos. They're there, some of them awaiting trial. But he decided, if you're here, it means you're guilty. And for years, he had meted out his own brand of justice. But people liked him. A whole bunch of folks liked him. Because he was a true American, you see. He was a true lover of law and justice, even if he's breaking them both. But he was the boss. And he got away for years with this conduct until he was charged, actually, in a lawsuit with doing these things. And the court found that, in fact, the charges against him were legitimate and ordered him immediately to stop. But he didn't. His feeling was, around here, I am the law. Nobody's going to tell me how to run this part of the country. I know this country. This is my part of the country, and I run it. So they quietly took him off the job. And we hadn't heard from him for a while. But now comes Donald Trump. And his constituency loves a guy like Arpaio. And Trump, if you remember, I played the tape, Trump intimated very strongly, he might as well have just said it, that he was going to pardon Arpaio. But not now. Not now. I don't want to upset anything right now, is pretty much what he said. But soon after that, then came the final decision by Trump that Arpaio has been pardoned by him. What's the significance of that? What do you think about that? Now, this becomes even more important with the backdrop of the disaster unfolding in Texas. All hell is breaking loose over there. And by then, you see, the noise about Arpaio, at least for the moment, would have abated, and the issue would have taken second place to the storm. A great tactical move. But a shallow mind making it. Because what? Do you think people will just forget? You think they won't, when the storm is calm and so forth, you think this wouldn't come back to you somehow? You think people are going to forget about this completely? And that you chose this method of doing it? They're not going to forget. They're not going to forget. And it's a very interesting way to operate as a president, where your legal actions are questionable. People are saying, well, he has the right. He's operating well within the right as president to pardon. But that is not really the issue, is it? The issue is, you are knowingly pardoning somebody who broke the law, who broke the law issued by a federal court. This is not a regular guy. This is someone who was instructed by the court to stop a practice. He didn't. And he publicly stated he was not going to obey the court's law. He was the law. Now, that is the issue. It's not whether the president has a right to pardon somebody. He does. But this is not just somebody. This is a person who at this time in our political consciousness, at this time, he emerges as a great symbol of that burgeoning movement that is adopting all the tactics, all the thinking, all the practices of the Nazi type movement that we see emerging here in the United States. He's openly and blatantly racist. And he has openly defied a court, a federal court. And he has done so as an officer of the court, an officer of the law. So what does it mean when a president says, I'm going to pardon you? Does that mean that Donald Trump could be said to be sympathetic to these kinds of feelings? Does he endorse the flouting of the law by an officer of the law? Because that officer of the law made a reputation of attacking Latinos and people of color generally and abusing his power? Does Trump identify with any of that and therefore said, hey, this is my kind of guy. He thinks like I do. So I'm going to pardon him. Now we have some questions. But he's not available. He's taking care of some other business at the moment. He can't be reached. And that's one of the sneak attacks that we had on Friday. People are missing the point. It's not whether Trump is abusing his power as president. The question here is, as the president of the United States, how can he legally pardon someone with such a profile of flouting the law, flouting the courts, basically saying, I rule this joint. You can't do a thing to me. And the president backs a sentiment like that with such a bold move of a pardon. All right. We'll take your call. Oh, the caller is gone. Anybody could tell me about something unusual that happened while all of this storming is going on. The president is doing some other stuff. What do you know? At 888-874-4888. And we want to know what you think of it in terms of the symbolism of his act. What do you think? Okay. So we got two so far. There are a couple more, but I'm not going to push it. But this is what we ought to be thinking about, because Donald Trump is under heavy attack, and some for ridiculous reasons, but some for very, very important reasons and constitutional reasons. And he does not intend to account. But that's probably because nobody's asking and demanding that he account. When I say ask and demand that the president account, I don't mean, you know, you go up to him and say, you know, Donald, look, we've been buddies for 30 years now. I know you. I know the kind of person you are, et cetera, et cetera. And keep the conversation in that tone. You ask when he's presented with formal documents that say, here, answer these questions. under penalty of law. We have to have some questions answered here. What do you understand to be your constitutional power as president? That you could do anything? Is that your sum total of what you understand your powers as president to be? Is it your belief that you are not to be challenged, you are not to be asked any questions about your actions at all? In that case, this issue of Arpaio, it's being kind of shifted into, well, people are upset with Trump for pardoning Arpaio just because, well, they don't like Arpaio's politics. Nope, that's not the issue. That's not the issue. But when you put the issue squarely on the table and you say, you were directed by a federal court not to do A, B, C, D, and E under threat of heavy punishment, you were ordered to do these things. And you said, I ain't gonna. I'll do what I want. I'm the president of this portion of Arizona over here. I rule over here. I don't recognize your authority. You don't know what the heck you're talking about. And we have had similar responses from other people in the Trump administration and in government generally. But under the Trump administration, there is no argument that we have had a huge number of renegades who think they're running the country. They can do what they want. That includes Trump's sons. It includes his son-in-law. It includes his daughter. It includes people associated business-wise with them. They're all acting like they don't have to obey anybody or anything. They are in charge of this country. And whatever they want to do, they'll do it. So when people say, well, you're just mad because, well, Arpaio, he successfully pardoned Arpaio. No, not at all. If the President of the United States exercised good judgment and within the law himself, he chose to pardon Arpaio, well, you know, that's that. But that's not what this is. This is Arpaio breaking the law and saying, screw you. I don't have to listen to you. Ma'at, you're back with us?
Yes, I have some information on Arpaio because sometimes I'm just hypnotized by all this surrealistic news. First of all, what were some of his crimes? He hog-tied people. He had women give birth in full shackles. He, of course, as you so rightly said, he targeted Latinos to the point where if someone had a Latino last name, I mean, he actually locked up in his 115-degree plus desert people who, you know, were perhaps Puerto Ricans or had been here, people who were absolutely American citizens. People died. So he murdered people under color of law. Additionally, it seems that when you do a pardon as a president, and most of them do it at the end of their terms, particularly after 8 years, as with Obama, the Department of Justice is supposed to start the process, okay? Also, usually the whole case has proceeded. So the Ohio federal case was about to, he hadn't even been sentenced yet. Okay, so usually a pardon is always done after the case, including appeals, are done. Secondly, Trump is so racist that as the charges were initially put on a pile, and it took a lot of organizing and what, 20-something-year effort to get all this to come down, he went to, of all people, Jeff Sessions and tried to do the pardon before the case had gone through the initial process of the court in the federal court saying, you know, convicting him. And so Jeff Sessions actually advised him that it would be improper, inappropriate, unlawful for him to have tried to dismiss the charges that were put on him before it went through the initial court process. So I just wanted to share that because it
Thank you. And don't forget, you know, this was the same guy who literally went to great lengths to begin an inquiry into the birth of Barack Obama. We still don't know where the money for that came from, but presumably when he went to Mexico or he went to this place or to that place following some lead on Obama and his birth, I am pretty sure he used government funds to do that. Pat, you're on the air and you have a little bit of time, so we got to rush you today.
Okay. I don't know if you had a chance to mention how President Trump lifted the ban on selling military equipment to local police departments.
Not yet. I was waiting for someone to raise it, and you have. Yes. What's the significance of that move?
He snuck in. Excuse me?
Hello?
That's the most alarming thing for me that he did this weekend. I mean, of course, coupled with what happened with Arpaio, but the two together. So he's arming our police departments with military equipment.
So that went into effect under Obama.
After Ferguson.
As a result of what happened in Ferguson. Ferguson, that the police departments across the United States will not have at their disposal certain kinds of weapons that they consider to be way more than they need to do their regular police duties.
A lot of these police departments, you know, being like amphibious devices, but maybe now they'll be able to use that down in the Gulf because, you know, considering what's been going on, you know, there.
Thank you.
The neglect down there. So anyway, thank you so much for a great show.
You came in the clutch. Thanks so much for that. That's a very big issue to say, oh, no, the police departments, I'm giving them all the stuff they need. I'm giving them whatever they ask for. Their tanks, their whatever it is they need to do their police work. So, you know, we could expect a little chat about that after this current issue is over and well in hand, because now we are moving toward full-blown state control. Full-blown. And you can't deny that this is a reflection of how Donald Trump is thinking and what he's thinking. Well, we've come to the end of the program. Thanks so much for listening and contributing. And keep in your good thoughts the people who are suffering, that they come through okay. And also research, in the meantime, some credible places that if you wish to send a dollar or two, you know, you can send with the confidence that it's actually going to a credible place that has a record of doing what it says it's committed to doing. Thanks so much. Well, let's see. We have coming up next. What do we have coming up next? I switched my pages. I can't even confess. I did. I switched my pages. Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. We'll see each other tomorrow. Some really good stuff coming up this week, and we'll be getting deep into it. Thank you so much, and keep people in your prayers. Me too. Thanks.
Don't let him ride.